The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 683. It's the 13th of January, 2017. On the podcast today, I have full-time private investor, the Mad Stork. He went full-time back in November. I catch up with him, and he also talks about the following companies: Zenith Energy, that's said he Motif Bio, MTFB, and Asia Met Resources, ARS. Also on the podcast, Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon, talks about many things. Once I get chatting to Simon, I can't stop. I find it really hard. We talk about Trump, Brexit, etc., etc. Also on the podcast today, I have today's suggested one for your watch list, which is Horizonte Minerals. Now, like I said, every week I'm going to do an audio summary of my blog that I write on the weekend. And our last weekend was about Horizonte Minerals. So I've done this myself, and it's for a friend of mine who basically doesn't read. He said, do an audio version. It turns out I did one. He didn't listen. But anyway, I'm going to continue to do that on a weekly basis for people who don't read the blog but listen to the podcast. Also on the podcast today, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox platform also in the last 24 hours.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's full-time private investor, the Mad Stork. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not too bad, Justin, not too bad.
How many months has it been now since you've been full-time, you know, because you had a gig there on the side and then you decided you had enough capital to go alone? So how many months has it been now?
Well, I went full-time in the second week of November, so yeah, almost exactly 2 months now.
How are you finding it? How's the change? What's happening? Is anything, what positive has come from it? What negative has come from it?
Well, positive, obviously, is that, you know, I have total freedom to do whatever I want. I've got no commitments, nowhere I have to be, you know, no sort of Sunday evening where it's like, oh God, gotta go to work on Monday and sort of dreading it. But you know, but on the negative side,
that's part of the negative as well, though, isn't it? That no commitments and freedom, because also you lose all kind of, you know, sort of discipline, can't you? You know,
exactly.
But have you given yourself a sort of routine? Have you forced yourself into a routine though? Because sometimes if you don't, like I said, that can be a bit of a downfall, can't it? You can start, you know, doing things, and or have you got, you know, a definite routine you're into now or not?
Most days, what I'll do is something like I'll get up. If I don't need to do anything in terms of changing any of the trades or orders that I've got set up due to the RNSs, I'll probably look to go for a walk, sort of about 8 o'clock or so. Sounds crazy because the market's opening then, but I often find that the worst time to buy on an RNS, but if you're not quite sure about how good it is actually 8 o'clock.
Yeah, right. Do you know what?
It's time to sell.
Absolutely. Do you know what? I a while back, and I haven't stuck to it. I should write it down, because I think when you write things down, it's good. But for a while, I always said to myself, never ever buy or sell in the first half an hour of the market opening. You know, let it settle down, and then you know, sit back. And so that's a rule I sort of imposed. But I've broken it several times. You know, I haven't stuck to it.
I break it all the time.
I know. Yeah. Okay. So let's look at individual stocks you're looking at. You think you have some potential here, but for, you know, in a word though, are you trading more? Are you doing more punts, more short term trades?
I'm trying not to.
Okay, all right. Well, so I know we sent an email yesterday. So it's three stocks we're going to look at here. What's the first one you want to look at?
Well, let's start with Zenith Energy, which I think is getting a bit of interest on Twitter now. I took the IPO, the London placing, because it was dual listed in Canada before. It was listed in Canada before, so they've listed in London now.
So you took stock at 7p, was it?
7p.
Yeah,
So that's my entry. And prior and last month, I met had lunch with Sasha. Yeah, no, Sasha. His club, along with Andrea, CEO of Zenith, and a few other private investors, and got the full idea of what's going on. And you know, this deal they've done for the assets in Azerbaijan, you know, it looks on paper, it looks brilliant. I mean, you know, the NPV of the asset is about 550 million Canadian dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, and you compare that to the market cap. Now, obviously, they've got some people have been saying on the admission document there's like a huge liability for like 400 million or whatever. That's not a debt. That is the royalty payment. That they will have to pay when they sell oil. It's all. I don't know how it's been accounted, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a big debt, like some people are saying. It's healthy because it's.
So he paid off revenue they earned then, is it? Yeah. So he paid off revenue they earned. So it's not they're sitting there, they owe it straight away. So it's only paid if they make it.
Right.
And it's a strong day, actually, Zenith. It's looking at it right now. And I'm looking at up 15% at 9.3 pence. And I'm looking at the trades there. Pretty much all buys today. One sell I can see. Pretty much all buys.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's big volume. I mean, there was, apparently there was more volume in one day on Wednesday than there had been in an entire year on the TSX.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, there's someone or there was someone selling shares in the background because you had loads of buyers and it wasn't moving, which I expected because you know you got people in Canada. Who've been basically, because the shares have been extremely illiquid in Canada, basically unable to, if they did want to sell, yeah. They've been really unable to in Canada because there's just no volume and liquidity. Yeah. And you move to London and there's suddenly a whole load of liquidity. So ideal chance to get out if you want to. So I'm not surprised by that. But I do think that the underlying value of the deal they've done is so good that it will push the stock quite a bit higher.
So I've talked to Andrea and they've got assets in Italy, Argentina, but the main one is Azerbaijan, isn't it? Is it 300 barrels a day, I think, and then they're looking to work those wells over to increase that, aren't they?
Well, that's it. I mean, at the moment, the production is about 300 and they're looking to spend most of the money that they got from this placing on some very cheap workover program, which they're sort of targeting, I believe. I haven't got the exact numbers in front of me, so this might be a bit wrong, but I think they are targeting 1,000 barrels a day by the end of 2017,
okay.
Which is, you know, for that market cap is quite incredible, and the yeah. cost per barrel. The actual production cost is already low. I think it's $18 at the moment, but they're looking to force that down significantly to around about 10 to 12. But again, I haven't got the exact numbers in front of me, so that might be a bit off.
Yeah, but exactly. But do your own research, everyone. All right, so the next stock is, what are you looking at? So we've had ZEN there, ZEN. It's not a sub 10 million market cap. What's the next one, fella?
Motif Bio.
Yeah.
And again, I think you've had Graham on a couple of times, and so I don't need to go over the story that much.
But
I do think that it's this price after it's dropped down. I was in the placing at 28p, so I got stopped out of my buy on that. So I made a big loss on the placing. But you know. The reason I hooked the place in the first place is because you've got the phase three trials coming up.
Yeah.
And that's going to be phase three trial results. And that's going to be make or break for the company. And I think there's an excellent chance that there'll be very good results. And I think people will buy in anticipation of those results. And the price is at kind of a stable low point now. So I bought back in, and I would expect that to do very well as the sort of results approach and people buy in anticipation.
Yeah, I think I do hold Motif Bio, and I think the excellent sort of drug there, and been tested on over 600 people so far, and that's ramping up for phase three. Two parts of phase three, isn't there? But I genuinely believe, and also I did speak to them, was it start of the week, where they're at the JP Morgan Health Conference in San Francisco, and they said basically it's like the Oscars of the healthcare world. If you're not there, you know, you're not involved, essentially. And that's where, you know, they have makes it there a week or 3 days worth of meetings back to back with people. And of course, something could come from that very soon.
I mean, you know, a new antibiotic, new class of antibiotics is huge.
And also, just look at it there. Like I said, look at their peers, who are pretty much not that much further down the line than them, and they're literally, they are valued 5-6 times greater than Motive Bio, and they're also on the NASDAQ as well. So I just think, you know, you could see a quick re-rating happening here. Like you say, at the moment, you can see a nice support level around about, you know, 24, 23 pence. And so this seems the risk is already, you know, priced in there almost.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's a great, I think from a chart and a logic point of view, I mean, you know, why would you be selling? You're not going to be in profit, and you're going to be missing out on the main event for the company. So I can't see many people selling now, and I can see people buying in anticipation.
Yeah, and to me, it's like you could liken the Data 3, readout there, the first lot, as a spud. You know, it's almost at that time,
yes,
isn't it, when you're
exactly,
the rise to the spud of an oil company. Okay,
it's a make or break then.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Asia Met Resources is the last one, isn't it? ARS, we've gone backward alphabetically. I know this company very well, Antonio. I do a whole stock in Asia Met. What's your reason for getting in there?
I've known Tony and the Asia Met story for quite some time. You know, as I've told people, whenever we talk about stocks and shares on AIM, you've always got to assume, with small cap AIM companies, the end goal is it's not going to work, and you know, the stock's either going to zero or it's going to be diluted into oblivion, and you're going to lose all your money in the long term. So I think you've got to assume that for all of these stocks. That said, there are obviously always some exceptions, and while I can't say for sure that Asia Met is going to be a success, what I can say is that I strongly believe that Tony will do everything he possibly can to make it a success. I think he believes he was 100% in the company, and he does everything he possibly can to ensure shareholder value. And I cannot say that about quite a few CEOs, but Tony, I'm absolutely convinced, does have that shareholders' best interests at heart, and he knows the business. The asset is, you know, the project is really good, and you're at a point in the copper market where it's kind of an inflection point where the supply shortage that's sort of going to kick in is going to kick in for in earnest sort of this year, and you're going to see the price go up on the back of that, and then you're going to see the big miners look round for good early stage copper projects. And there's few better than Asia Met.
Yeah, like I say, he's done this kind of thing before. Well, do you know what? People can argue about supply and demand of copper, right? We all know that renewables is coming in and they use a lot of copper. What is telling, though, and no one argues with, and it's the fact that copper grades are getting worse, right? So that means companies have to do more work, drill deeper holes, or do lots of mining, and the costs go up. And so Asia Met are in a low cost producer, one of the lowest, you know. So you've always got that advantage on your side. So when other companies having to dig deeper for decent grades and the costs go up, Asia Met, they've got a project that's over the life of the mine, which at the moment is 8 years. I expect that to extend as they do further work, but it's going to generate 40 million of free cash flow, you know, each year. So it's, you know, so I think it's a compelling project. Tony,
you're going to get and then this sort of, I think it's the, you know, it's going to be the first half of this year. You can get a lot more clarity on the actual number, on the actual potential profitability from the DFS.
Yeah.
So that will be great.
Yeah. And exactly. And I mean, looking back over there, I'm looking back at the news stream here and at the drilling results, and they're quite regular. So we shouldn't be that far off from some more drilling results, hopefully. So, yeah, so we get to look at that. As we're speaking now, Zenith Energy is now at 21.5%. So that's looking like, as far as you're concerned, what's your strategy on that? I mean, are you looking to double? What are you looking for there?
As I say, I think their asset, the value that's been independently placed on their asset is such that even if it doubles or trebles, I think it's probably still undervalued. Now, I haven't got any limit orders or anything set for it, but obviously, if it looks like it's overheating, I will probably take some profit. I don't want to give specific targets, but with the right amount of interest and more importantly, a bull market in oil, which is what we're in at the moment, which is one of the things that attracted me to the deal in the first place. As long as the oil bull market continues, and as long as people like the story, and it's a good story, I think. And as long as they can actually deliver the workovers, get that production up, then I see no reason to sell.
Yeah, cool. All right, so that was Zenith Energy, Motive Bio, and Asia Met. Thanks very much, Tom, and speak again soon, fella.
Thank you, Ross, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon. It's Simon French. Good afternoon, or good morning it is at the moment as we record, but this people may be listening. That's what's perfect about a podcast. You can listen whenever you want, Someone could be listening to this in 2020, Simon. We never know.
It's brilliant, Justin. It's morning, noon, night, whenever you're listening. It's great. It's great to speak with you. And lots to cover today.
Yeah, but hopefully, like I said, if someone is listening in 2020, the issues we discuss are quite topical. Hopefully, so they'll be out of date. So what are we looking at this week, Simon? What's caught your eye?
Well, keeping with that 2020 theme, let's look at China, because, of course, this is an economy that, if we were sat having this podcast 12 months ago, everybody was talking about China and the slowdown in that economy that really rattled financial markets. 12 months on, you'll probably have noticed that things have gone a little bit more quiet. Partly that's because the economy has picked up. But partly, I think, is because there's other geopolitical things in the West that people are focusing on. But I think there's some disappointing data out overnight on exports that should get investors a little bit worried that all is not good under the hood of the Chinese economy.
Yeah, so what was it? It was two years in a row. I saw a report on this. 2 years in a row now of declining exports. But yet, this somewhat surprised me. Like I said, obviously this is looking backwards. But like I said, we've had a bit more bullish news out from China of late. But yet these exports are showing that 2 years now of declining exports. So what's it take? Is China improving now though?
Right. So it's the legacy of a very, very strong yuan. You might not think so from based on the last few months when it's been pushing towards that exchange rate of 7 with the US dollar. But the history is that the yuan has been the strongest performing major currency of the last 15 years. It followed the dollar up in the last couple of years, and only really has just come off those levels. So it's making it tough for Chinese exporters. And adding to what I suspect might be a bit of a perfect storm for the Chinese corporate sector is the fact that they have huge dollar debt, more than $1 trillion worth of dollar-denominated debt. And clearly, as the exchange rate weakens, that becomes more expensive. Mm-hmm. You've got the potential of the Fed raising interest rates. And the third part, of course, is the Trump trade, is that if he whacks a 45% tariff, which he's mooted on Chinese exports into the US, that makes things very, very difficult for China in 2017.
Yeah. Did you see that press conference? That's phenomenal, I thought. I still can't believe it. Looking at that, some parts of me think it can't be that bad, really. But then I saw that press conference, I thought, this is a guy that's going to be the president, the most powerful man in the world, just heckling and, you know, dealing with a heckler or treating, you know, a press guy like a heckler at a comedy club, you know. I thought, that's disgraceful, I just thought. I really,
well,
I mean, dumbstruck
by it. Whatever you make of the economics, and you know, it's fair to say that it's dividing the economics community what his stimulus plan, what his for more America first economic doctrine will do. The pure politics of it is, I mean, he's ripped up the rule book, hasn't he? He communicates through Twitter, as we spoke about on last week's podcast, but also he is prepared to go on the attack against BuzzFeed, against CNN, and call them out on what he is accusing them of publishing, which is obviously fake news. And there was a quite interesting tweet out there. He says, never believe when a news agency says sources close to. But, I mean, the history of Donald Trump is when he accused Barack Obama of not being born in the US and being born in Kenya. Yeah. His tweets were laden with sources close to. So I think there's a fair amount of hypocrisy that people are quite ready to call him out on.
Yeah, I saw that being tweeted out today and retweeted thousands of times about him saying, I've just seen someone who's got his birth certificate or a copy of his birth certificate. And I thought, yeah, nice one, Donald. Okay, so what you're looking at next, Simon?
Yeah, I thought we'd cover UK corporate profits because, I mean, with the FTSE having closed yesterday, it just sneaked, didn't it, to 11 days in a row and moving higher. And there are undoubtedly going to be listeners to this podcast who are getting a little bit nervous. You know, above 7,000, we were there before in 99, we were there again in 2007, and both times that preceded a precipitous fall, and therefore people looking at this level again and going, this feels a bit rich for me. I guess the other side of the argument, the one I want to focus on this morning, is the corporate profits in the UK, which are the key driver for share values, have been holding up very well. In quarter three, the ONS reported they were 12.2%, which is back to their pre-crisis norms, plus the fact that this year on the all share, the weakness of sterling means that a lot of dollar-denominated, euro-denominated revenues are much more valuable, and the bounce back in commodity prices means that earnings, I expect earnings to increase by EBITDA, this is, by 64% in 2017. So if you're getting a bit worried, the good news is that while equity markets have been driven forward by QE and re-rating in the last 4 or 5 years, this year the earnings story is much stronger.
Yeah, yeah. And normally, when you see a rise like this, you know, as you never underestimate momentum, you know, and people start buying into when I've seen, especially stocks, when stocks you think are overbought, people keep buying and they keep going higher. And when you think they can't go higher, they go higher again. So it's almost like the momentum carries it, doesn't it? You know, and so you should never just say, oh, it's a bit toppy, because we have broken out from previous highs. Like I said, that's almost a bullish sign.
Absolutely. And you look at the bullish signals coming forward from the global PMIs, the opportunity in the US, particularly, at least in the short run. Now, we talked last week about the legacy of Trump's economic agenda, but in the short run, a cut in corporation tax from 35% to 15%, a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, that's likely to be in both inflationary and stimulus into the US economy. So in the short term, corporate earnings should head upwards from here. And that, but like in the UK, as drives the FTSE, corporate earnings in the US have driven the S&P over the last 30 years.
Yeah, cool. And what's the third subject you're looking at?
So I thought we'd just have a quick preview of the weekend ahead. So next week in the UK, we get UK inflation data out on Tuesday. Previous reading of 1.2%. I think we may well see 1.5% in the data out on Tuesday. And Wednesday, we get the labour market data. I've always thought if we're going to get a retrenchment in the UK economy, it's going to come through the labour market. Thus far, it's held up really well. Get claim and count earnings data. And then Thursday, retail sales. And following Super Thursday yesterday with retailers, I think, you know, you expect a strong retail sales number growing at 5.9% annually. I think we'll get another plus 5% print out from the ONS. But without doubt, both sterling and the UK sentiment will be driven by what happens on Tuesday, which isn't economic data, will be Prime Minister May's speech on Brexit. Obviously, sterling has been highly sensitive to whether she indicates a hard Brexit, a soft Brexit. I think she'll provide more details on Tuesday, and sterling is at least its forward implied volatility on currency futures markets suggests it's going to be a really quite volatile week for the pound.
Yeah. Generally, though, I in my head, I don't know why, I feel quite bullish, but then I think of Trump. I think, oh no, and Brexit together. There we are. So there we are. All right, Simon.
Well, I just close on one thought regarding Trump and Brexit and the UK. I went last night to see Andrew Neil, so the presenter of the Daily Politics, speak about what insights he has for 2017, and it was his thoughts were that the Trump administration want to very very quickly, probably within Q1 this year, do sign a memorandum of understanding between the UK and the US on a free trade deal, which may well surprise a lot of your listeners because, of course, the UK can't, while it's a member of the EU, do bilateral trade deals. But nothing stops it doing a memorandum of understanding. Mm. My understanding is the Trump administration want to signal that they are very much in support of the UK as it tries to make a success of Brexit. And I think that may well change the sentiment towards the ability of the UK to carve its own direction outside the European Union.
So what some people see as two negatives could actually turn out to be a positive. You never know.
Absolutely, and it's so definitely one to watch, and definitely I think one to play into your sort of the game theory that you're trying to work out in terms of the European elections this year in the Netherlands, in France, in Germany, potentially in Italy, the fallout from Brexit, Trump. There will be some good stories as the whole global order gets shuffled up, thrown up in the air, and see how it lands.
Lovely. Simon, chat next week.
Looking forward to it. Cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It's Horizonte Minerals, HZM is ticker there, submitted by me, and it's an audio summary of my blog from the weekend, if you didn't read that. What does the company do? Horizonte is a nickel development company focused in Brazil, which wholly owns the advanced Araguaia nickel laterite project located to the south of the Caracas mineral district of northern Brazil. The company is developing Araguaia as the next major nickel mine in Brazil with targeted production in late 2019. What's the current price and market cap? So it's 2.55 pence, market cap 29 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? No revenue at the moment as their exploration stage. In their interims for the 6 months ended 30th of June, they lost £956,000. How much cash debt does the company have? No debt. They raised £9 million in November at 2 pence per share. So list three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Don't forget, this is just information. Don't use this in any way as basis to invest. It's not investment advice. Do your own research. Number one, the first reason, massive assets. Ooh, missus. Horizonte is one of the largest and highest grade undeveloped nickel saprolite resources in the world. It has potential to be a tier one asset. By tier one, it's defined as a large, expandable, long life, so plus 20 years of mine life, with favorable mineralogy and geographic location, and in the lower half of the cost curve. So according to their pre-feasibility study, published in October, this project is expected to generate $1.3 billion in free cash flow over a 28-year mine life. That's with nickel prices at $12,000 per ton. That's $46 million every year for 28 years on average. It's also expected to generate $1.9 billion of free cash flow over the life of mine if nickel prices are $14,000 per ton. That's $67 million every year for 28 years. Remember, this is free cash flow. So that's around $80 million in profit a year. And Horizonte is in a market cap at the moment. Is just 13 million. Reason two, shareholders. There are very few, if any, AIM companies of a similar size and profile to Horizonte that possess such big institutional shareholders on their register. I'll give you an example. JP Morgan. This is a 308 billion market cap company and they hold 8.4%. Glencore, £41 billion market cap company, holds 6.4%. Tech Resources, $20 billion market cap company. And this is Canada's largest mining company. They hold 17.9%. And Henderson Global Investors there hold 14.1%. And that's a phenomenal shareholder register for such a small cap company. Number three, nickel. Third reason. currently at around about $10,250 per ton. Nickel is bump along the bottom, multi-year lows. In Q1 of 2016, nickel hit a 13-year low of $7,550 per ton. Prices have since increased, but in 2007, this will give you an example of the range of nickel. It reached an intraday high of $54,000 per ton. It's now at, you know, a fifth of that. Now, global demand for nickel has grown at an average of 6.3% since 2010. It's estimated to have grown between 2.4% and 4.4% in 2016. And the market returned to a balance in quarter four 2015 and showed around 80,000 ton deficit at the end of 2016. So the supply deficit here in nickel market. Now, there's lots of predictions from big investment banks. And I've just picked out one. Morgan Stanley has had a nickel, its most preferred metal of 2016. And its forecast, its long-term price, will be around $16,775 per ton. And so you can see Horizonte's pre-feasibility study did two models at $12,000 and $14,000. And at $14,000, they're creating $80 million of profit a year. So you can see even general consensus, and that one there from Morgan Stanley is mid-range. There's higher predictions than that and a little bit lower, but they're all above the $14,000 per ton. So that's Horizonte Minerals, HZM. Don't forget, listen, please do your own research. Nothing on this podcast is intended as investment advice. All right, okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Caledonia Mining, CMCL. I had Morris there from Caledonia on yesterday's podcast. At four, 88 Energy, that's ADD. At three, URU Metals, URU, also in the nickel space. At two, been doing very well today, actually, Zenith Energy, ZEN, floated this week. And at one, really big riser yesterday, Edenville Energy, EDL, off the back of an RNS there. All right, talking about RNSs, here are the top five most liked RNSs out in the last 24 hours. At five, Ariana Resources are placing to raise £900,000. At four, Upland Resources, UPL, OGA approval for increased stake in Pedal 229, that's hard-stuffed. At three, Snoozebox, zzzz, Isle of Man TT Accommodation. At two, this is out yesterday, but later in the podcast, Edenville Energy, trial mining commences. And at number one, the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets platform today, as in the app or on the website, was 88 Energy's Conventional Prospectivity Review and Ice Wine Update. That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And please get involved in my One for Your Watchlist feature. If you know of a stock that you think has potential, then please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click one of my posts there, scroll down, and you'll see a link where it says, do you know of a stock with potential? Click this link, fill in the form, and I could feature it on a future podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.